Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. Tom, I posted on Facebook, I said, what happened to monsoon 2025? All I see are blue skies and perhaps 110 degree temperatures. One of my friends pointed out, Bill, I guess you were not in the vicinity of Ina and Oracle last night where this friend said it rained for about an hour. But no, generally, it's been kind of a dud.
Hit and miss.
Very hit and miss.
And there's a lot of missing.
Yeah, a lot of missing. And does not feel like kind of a typical summer rainy season. Buckmaster off and running on this first day of August. We are in the Green Thing Zilkalo Village Studios. We have five radio stations under one location, all part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center. All the stations are doing very well, especially our friends over at The Drive. My goodness, the ratings show them as certainly one of the most popular radio stations in Tucson. So our congratulations to the team here right next door, The Drive, and we'll hear from them later with our weekend watch. All right, 14 and a half years under our belts with the radio program and 37 and a half years in Tucson media. Worldwide live listening of our program at buckmastershow.com. We live feed the program and take that feed from kvoi.com during the noon hour. But we do have at buckmastershow.com, which I'm very proud of, pretty much every show we've done. All the podcasts go all the way back to the first week of January 2011. When we do our telephone interviews, and folks are always welcome to call in at 790-2040. That's our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. A couple of media shout-outs that we do on Friday, TucsonSentinel.com, and one of the ACE reporters, senior reporter Paul Ingram, is actually my media co-host today from TucsonSentinel.com. Paul, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And always my best to you and the team over there, to Dylan and Ninsel and Natalie, who's doing a great job.
Natalie left. She's in Albuquerque, New Mexico now.
Well,
yeah, but we have a new reporter, Mia Cornwright, who's doing some stuff for us.
I remember going seeing Natalie as a child,
right?
Because I remember the kind of the christening party that we had for Natalie. She, of course, being the daughter of my former colleague at Arizona Illustrated, Ted Robbins.
Right, right.
So, boy, could that be? Now she's all grown up and doing great things. So she went to Albuquerque.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. She's working for the newspaper there.
Oh, good. Yeah. All right. Our also Green Valley News, Saharita Sun, Tucson Spotlight also supporting us. Chad Kazmir is here. Chad's the police chief in the city of Tucson. We try to bring him in every couple months for sure. Chief, how are you?
Good. Bill, Tom, Paul, good to see all three of you. We're doing outstanding.
It's good to see you. And why don't we begin with, we had Councilman Cunningham on the show on Wednesday. A couple of items that I think are very important to you. One, Paul would like to see some money redirected toward getting you and your team members more money, helping retention, helping recruiting. Good idea?
Great idea.
Yeah.
And absolutely needed. Critically needed.
10% below maybe the market value generally on your police force?
I think so. When we compare, the city compares on their market analysis, our local market, which is Oro Valley, Marana, and Pima County Sheriff's Department, and then several of the Valley agencies, and those are fantastic organizations, our partners to the north, and the sheriff is an outstanding partner. But just recognizing the work that we do as a major metropolitan city, the 33rd largest one with a fair amount of violent crime, and the complexities of the work that we do needs to be compensated in an equitable manner with some of our sister departments up.
The other item the councilman brought up is about bus fares. He's going to reintroduce when the council meets next week that bus fares, as far as Councilman Cunningham believes, there needs to be a charge for buses. Would you agree that that are the buses, as many believe, just a conduit to crime?
You know, I think it's a really complex issue. I've tried to not get into the pros or cons because mayor and council have made the decision on that. And they, like you said, they'll be discussing that next week. What I can tell you is when we talk specifically about community safety and the trends that we've seen, yes, we have seen an uptick in violence on the buses or violence or property theft around the bus stops and the bus being used for those types of crimes, unfortunately. So there's always pros and cons of all those things, but certainly from the perspective of my officers and the work that we're seeing, it has created some challenges for us at a time where we have pretty thin on resources out in the field.
All right, here's Paul Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, actually thinking about that, I mean, you see property crime really related to bus routes, or do you see crime more on the buses, or can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, the property crime surrounding the bus routes are folks that are timing the theft, so then they can go out. They know they're going to be unchallenged when they commit the theft. They know the bus route time and the probability of our officers being able to get there on a low-level property theft, a shoplifting before. So we've had to work with our larger box stores and create systems and process where we can track, we can take photos, digital evidence, and then later go back and identify folks who are doing our more prolific shoplifting. But yeah, we absolutely have seen that.
To be like a grab and go, and then they time it to
we've had some high profile. I mean, I think it's been covered by media. Obviously, folks are tracking the calls that are coming in where we've had spontaneous acts of violence on the bus. Mm-hmm. Involving knives primarily. And then we've also had complaints of the drug use on the bus as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you see those incidents happening on kind of the same bus routes, or are they kind of happening throughout?
It happens throughout. We certainly have our corridors where we have denser population of unsheltered individuals because their services or, you know, geographic areas that they can live in, either washes or other, you know, other means or, and so it just becomes an epicenter. And so the denser population you have, you're going to have more frequent incidents around the bus stops and the buses. The other challenge that it's made for the officers out in the field is before, you know, you couldn't legally just loiter at a bus stop. And so everybody can drive around town. I get a lot of complaints about it. I know mayor and council do as well, of people loitering, drinking alcohol, smoking fentanyl. Typically is the complaints that come in. There's vandalism, there's graffiti, there's trash that populates around those areas. And it makes it more difficult for the officers because if there's a contact there, they'll just get on the bus, they'll go back down to the next one. So it's a little bit like squeezing a balloon sometimes.
Sure,
And, you know, if there's not a broader solution to the challenge, we're going to continue to be responsive to the community, but we'll just push that problem around the community.
And it looks like you are putting up, viewing devices at some of the bus stations. I can think of one I go by every day on the way to work here on Alvernon by Fort Lowell at that bus station. I don't know if it's got a blue thing like a camera on the top. Yeah.
Yeah, those are private, public-private partnerships. And
okay.
Cameras have been scaling both on behalf of the city and through business organizations. Mm-hmm. So we have the ability as a police department when crimes are occurring or it's a high crime area that we can start watching, try to deter that and then solve crime if it does happen.
Mm-hmm. So you have people actually watching those cameras, or is that more kind of evidence collection after the fact?
At this time, I would say it's more evidence collection after the fact. I mean, in a perfect world, in our real-time crime center, what we call CSARC, I would love to have enough staff where we can start doing that proactive. Hey, we've got a suspicious person here. We certainly do that for special events, but as far as, again, there's, you know, 250 square miles in our community. We have to recognize this is not the sleepy old Pueblo. We're a large right. community with a dense population, and it would take, 100 team members down there to be able to be doing that type of work.
In your four districts, is there one district that is more crime-laden in the city of Tucson?
There's not. So what's unique to Tucson is our geographic spread. So we don't populate our geographic areas just like they don't mirror the ward areas. So we refer to them as Operations Division, West, South, Midtown, and East. And so there are, you know, slightly higher levels of violence in certain geographic areas, but it's pretty much spread throughout the city.
Is that a unique, is that something that is unusual for a city?
It's every city has its own heartbeat.
I mean, we think of LA and the Ramparts district where there's a lot of crime, and Chicago's got its own
right.
Issues of a certain area, but
sure.
Tucson is spread out.
It's spread out. And so we have made wholesale changes to the way that we investigate gun crime and violent crime here in Tucson through the last 3 years through the Public Safety Partnership, the Department of Justice program, and have made radical changes in the shifts. And it is a data-based decision-making operation, and we have crime reduction meetings that occur once a month We have biweekly command meetings where we talk about what's going on from a daily basis and where we need to put our resources. And what that transcends into is pretty steady decreases when we're looking at violent crime and property crime throughout our community.
Yeah. But how do you do that? I mean, are you sending officers to specific locations? Absolutely. Are you doing investigations, accommodation? What is that like?
Yes.
Yes.
So
okay.
When we start with, you know, what we want to do is we want to be laser focused with the limited resources. We have less than 400 patrol resources, which includes the command teams, the Bravo, the community response teams, which is a plainclothes unit. There's two of those in our neighborhood crime. So it's really important that we're really intentional. We do hot spotting, which is where we will put an officer, community service officer, in a specific geographic area at a specific time. It's not necessarily focused on an individual, but an area, geographic area, where we know has a higher probability of crime occurring based upon the data and the calls for service that come in.
Are illegal immigrants driving crime in the city of Tucson?
They're not. Of course, you know, we had a high-profile homicide.
Mr. Aguilar?
Yes. Mr. You know,
who was arrested.
Yeah.
Aguirre,
excuse
so,
me.
So, yes. You know, my heart goes out to the Miller family and losing Ricky Miller was murdered that day in a little bit of a crime spree from Mr. Aguirre. And, you know, what I would tell you is before that day, I was able to say that as a 25-year veteran of the police department, I just can't remember a time where we had somebody here without citizenship or documentation that committed a homicide. And so that was a real unfortunate day here for us in Tucson. But the data supports that our folks who are here without documentation or citizenship in an environment where the last three administrations have failed to come up with any kind of meaningful immigration reform process. Unfortunately, this incident happened. You know, so it does highlight the complexities of gun crime in our community and in a broken immigration system and the need for, you know, a secure border and a common sense approach to all three of those things.
I mean, one thing that's sort of striking is like this guy was deported multiple times. I mean, the system is built to remove people, but isn't necessarily in some ways isn't really built to regularize people who would otherwise be in the country without legal authorization, right? It
right.
seems like there's, you know, we focus on these particular crimes, but there's lots and lots of people who are just living their daily lives.
And contributing to our local economy and enhancing our lives and what makes Tucson special. And so, you know, I'm part of a couple different organizations and as my responsibility as chief, we continue to work towards with our local, state, and federal government leadership to say, hey, the solution is, you know, and I've been on meetings where federal government has said, hey, the solution is anybody in your community who doesn't have status to be here needs to report and leave. And I told them, you know, that's not happening in Tucson. I can tell you right now, that's not a solution that's actually going to work here in Tucson. So we need to go back to the drawing board.
I mean, I think one of the problems is that lots of people have mixed families. There's this idea that like they're going to leave, but that means they're going to leave their families, their homes, their businesses, their entire lives to go back to a place that they may not have been since they were young kids, teenagers.
Sure. So. And don't have family roots. So more work to be done on that. I you know, we're all paying attention to what's happening with the federal budget. And it certainly, I'll tell you, I'm concerned for TPD. We run a tight budget, about a $223 million budget, $20 million of that budget are grants, but at a local, state, and federal level. And so there's more and more drive from the federal government for police departments to become cross-deputized, basically to do immigration enforcement, which I've been resistant to and will continue to be. It's, you know, and it's a much respect for all of our federal partners in the work and the jobs that they do. But as a chief of a major city police department, our focus is on violent crime, traffic safety, the narcotics that are impacting our community, and then how do we recruit and retain, you know, to make sure that we have a stable workforce to keep this community safe.
If someone is stopped for a traffic violation, would they be typically asked, are you a citizen of the United States?
It just depends. That's a full hour show probably on the requirements of SB 1070, which have started in our state over 15 years ago and have largely unchanged. That's why a lot of the narrative at a federal level hasn't really made a difference in the work that we're doing here locally. We do have a responsibility if there's reasonable suspicion if somebody's here without citizenship. There's protocols that we have to follow and notifications that we have to make, but it's not something we frequently come across.
All right, let's try to work in a listener question. This came in on my Facebook page, and then we'll take our first break. How has the ban on wash camping How is that being enforced, or is it being enforced?
It is. It's just another tool for the officers to have. Even before the sitting ordinance came back on, we had state statutes that we were able to enforce. Obviously, the big thing for me, and you highlighted, Bill, coming in, that we were supposed to have this fantastic monsoon season, and I was certainly worried about folks in the Santa Cruz and the Rito. And we've had one rescue, actually. It's unnecessary to put our firefighters and our first responders in that risk to do swift water rescues. That's preventable. We have to work with the state on that, too, because some of those geographic areas are actually state responsibility. But it's another tool for us to be responsive when we get the calls in and folks are complaining about individuals living in washes.
All right, we'll take our first break, 20 minutes past the hour. Paul Ingram is here from TucsonSentinel.com and the Chief of Police, Chad Kazmaier, and we're taking questions on my Facebook page. You can email me or you can call the live line, 790-2040. Be right back. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition, our Friday Focus interview today. Chad Kazmaier is here, who has been around the block. He didn't get off the bus yesterday with TPD. How many years, Chief, have you been wearing the uniform?
25 this month.
What did you do before that?
I was a lifeguard for the city of Tucson, where I met my lovely wife. So we're celebrating 25 years married also this month. And so I started lifeguarding in 1996, and Montana while I was attending the University of Arizona.
Serving in all divisions of TPD?
I've served in every single division and done a lot of great assignments. It's been an amazing 25 years, and in December will be my fourth year as chief.
Is there any duty or thing that you wanted to do? Didn't you get a chance to do?
Yeah, the only thing my wife told me I wasn't allowed to do was fly helicopters. I was a motor, I was a bike officer, I did undercover work. But when I told her, hey, I'd like to fly helicopters, she shot that
like,
down.
Nope.
Yeah.
Paul Ingram is here, Paul, senior reporter for the TucsonSentinel.com. And Paul's a terrific photographer, actually, as well as a great reporter. And he was honored by Photographer of the Year, I think, from Tucson, the Phoenix. No, it was Arizona Press Club. Did I get that right?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Press Club, yeah. Well, and then we got a couple of awards from the Association of Alternate News Publishers just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So,
did you ever use film?
I did.
Yeah.
That's how I learned to shoot was on film.
Me too, a long time ago.
And I remember the darkroom. It was great fun.
I had darkroom in college.
Yeah, I shot with a Leica Flex and great camera. Anyway, Chief, let's look at these crime statistics. We always like to bring everybody up to date. How are we doing on violent crime through the first 6 months compared to major American cities?
Yeah, their violent crime is down. So we had not only in our community, but it gets complex, and I want to unpack what that means. But from a national level, we're sitting at the first quarter was 2,810 homicides January through June, first half of the year, roughly.
How many homicides?
That was across the country. We had and includes nine jurisdictions in Canada, but 2,800 essentially, and that was down from 3,400. But here in Tucson, I would like to see homicides lower than they are at. We have 35 homicides year to date. We were at 34. Last year to date. We talked about a high profile one. Of course, that was Mr. Miller. He was our 30th homicide victim, but we've had five more victims since then. And so we had our 35th homicide occurred on the 25th of July, and we've taken Mrs. Lynn, who was a victim in that, Miss Lyons, in that situation. Her son was arrested for death.
Firearms?
I can't get into details on that just quite yet, but that was a domestic violence type situation, which we do see represented every year in a percentage of our homicides. So overall numbers, when we talk about Part One violent crime, which is your homicides, aggravated assaults, sexual assaults, the really high profile things, we're sitting at a 13.4% reduction year to date and a almost 12% 5-year reduction. When we talk about the property crimes, we're at a 24.4% reduction year to date and a 24% reduction on a 5-year average. When we talk about, we started tracking last year gun-related crimes and skin piercing, non-fatalities, but skin piercing bullet incidents. And so we're down 22.5% on those situations.
This is every time someone gets wounded by a gun, not
Correct.
Necessarily killed, but wounded.
Yeah, and a lot of departments aren't tracking that. And we felt that was important because when we talk about a skin piercing shooting that doesn't turn into homicide, that could be luck of where the individual was hit. It could be due to the life-saving care that the police officers respond. We deploy IFACs on all those types of situations, which can include sucking chest wounds. It can include all sorts of medical things that we can do in the field before our fire partners get there and take over a higher level.
Your team
care.
Does that then in the field?
Every day.
I did not know about that.
They can apply tourniquets. And that those skills have saved our officers' lives when our officers have been critically injured.
Right.
So when we provide that level of care to the community, sometimes we need to provide that care.
So when an officer's down, another officer could really save that other compadre's life.
Absolutely.
And in all seriousness, it's really actually a valuable thing to know. I've done it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you, our advanced officer training we just attended this year was really centered on medical care. And I was at a work function about a week after I had that care, where an individual had a life emergency where folks had to jump in, including myself, and provide care, and an individual was saved.
All right, let's go to our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the live line is our friend Matt, has a question for the Chief of Police. Hey, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. Real quickly, my last count was about 883 officers that were commissioned. Versus the total in the department. So I wonder if you could comment on that. Two, we've had incidences involving knives lately and machetes. Do you have any comments about that? And third, real quickly, if you could have better pay and benefits and less officers, or more officers and less better pay and benefits. Just curious, where does Tucson fit on your scale right now? Thank you.
Okay, three-part question. Go ahead, Chief.
Staffing. So we're sitting at 801 officer positions filled. That means people assigned to personnel numbers. 61 of those team members are in various forms of training, whether they're in the police academy. I have 42 out in the academy and 19 that are out in the field training. It's about a nearly 4-month academy and an additional 3 months of training, 4 months. It can go up to 4 months of training out in the field. So start to finish, it takes me a year to hire, recruit, train, and deploy an officer before they take one call for service. So,
and you lost some people recently.
Yeah, last month was heavy. We had 11 team members that retired for various reasons in July and 4 professional staff team members. So losing 15 team members in a month is a big deal to us when we're putting 20 to 25 team members through academies, police officer through academies. So we need to continue to focus on retaining the staff we have, increasing the staffing numbers at the police academy, jointucsonpd.org. We have about another month open in our hiring process for our March of 2026 police academy.
Okay, answer to question number two.
Knives. Yes, we are certainly seeing fights and or violence. We see a high rate of that within the unsheltered population. But we also see a fair amount of gun violence within that population as well. The question, your two-part question on
benefits
and pay, it's complicated response. You need both. You have to have a great benefits package and fair compensation, and I think we have a solid benefits package here in the city of Tucson, and I think we have to do a little bit of work to be a little more competitive on the market pay.
What's sort of the holdup for getting officers through NT Academy and through? I mean, is it just you don't have enough class space? You just don't have enough recruits that are viable? I know it takes 6 months, but could you have twice as many classes, and would that allow you to speed up the amount of officers?
No,
or is that pipeline?
It's the pipeline. So it's just the amount of folks that have decided that they're interested in a career. So I think we've seen an uptick in the last two classes by just spending dollars for recruiting and doing a better job of advertising and getting the word out. The way that we scaled community service officers from about 40 to over 140 of those folks was, it's such a great position, and it's fair pay, and we're effectively making people the breadwinners of their house with a high school GED.
Right.
So it's really competitive, and every single one of those spots that Mayor and Council gave me, I was able to fill. It gets more complicated three, 4 years later when folks have more defined attitudes about what police departments do. We're still reeling from 2020 and a lot of people, clumping us in with a national narrative around policing. So a lot of work to continue to do there.
How are you able to move the CSOs into, how many of the CSOs move into being full-blown officers?
It's about 4%. So I'd like it to be higher, grow our own. My idea would be that we'd get up to 900 commission and 300 community service officers and a culmination of professional staff investigators as well. We have 30 of those team members. And we still have more work to do. I threw those numbers out 4 years ago, and we've made progress, but we're not there yet.
Gauge on success with the CSOs.
Community service officers and how we really measure their impact. And I think one of the most powerful examples is when I look at the benchmarks and how we're doing as a department, and I look at our call response times. And we're down 2% on our level ones. We're down 3% year-to-date on our level twos. We're down 4% on our level threes. Our community service officers peeled over 65,000 calls for service off the board last year. And listen to this number, 46% reduction in our call response time in our level four. So we took nearly a 5-hour response time down to a 2.5-hour response time. Mm.
And
thanks
it seems
to our CSOs.
Like, remarkably, the CSOs are involved in their small traffic accidents. The CSOs are blocking traffic, making sure and undocumenting the accident. It seems like that gives your officers time to go do something else.
They do such a great job of it's putting the right work in the right hands. You're seeing them out there in Ford Mavericks now instead of our Crown Victorias, which will be retired out of patrol by the end of the year, I'm happy to report. And we really wanted to make sure the community understood they're not police officers, and so that was another push as we've scaled. But they're such a valuable team member. They help us with protest activities and keeping the peace, community events, and a variety of calls that don't require a gun in a badge.
Okay, we had a question from a listener about police officers. Some of them did not get a full raise because they had accrued too much overtime.
Yeah, Joe Ferguson had a we always appreciate shining attention onto the police force. you know, when you're down to 1989 staffing numbers, we don't dictate the calls for service or the level of violence necessary that's occurring within the community. And when you call 911, you want a police officer or you need a community service officer. You need that team member. And so we certainly use overtime to backfill and maintain operations. And that's some of the trends that you were seeing that Mr. Ferguson. So we have to look at that and what's sustainable. For example, we just had the Maccabi games here in Tucson, and they were successful, and there were no issues, but that was a really heavy lift. So whether we're talking about special events like El Tour, Gem Show, those events cause us to augment either through an off-duty management portal, which is a privately paid funded for the officers, or we have to augment that with overtime.
All right. We have not talked about, we talked a little bit about fentanyl, but how addictive is fentanyl? Everybody seems to be saying, well, it's such a huge problem. And one of the ways, I guess, or one of the reasons it's such a huge problem is the addiction level.
Fentanyl is, I've never seen a drug like it in my 25-year career of just the accessibility of it. There's a lot of conversation, and I think of the border being secure, but I'll tell you, as a involved with our High Intensity Drug Trafficking Alliance, what we call HIDA, Counter Narcotics Alliance, and my work here as the chief, the price of fentanyl has substantially not changed in the this year, and that's disappointing because we have to make it harder to come by. So we have a couple of variations of how we do that, and such a devastating drug. And we talked about this a little bit, Bill. This isn't a drug where people can just decide, hey, I'm going to sober up today and not use fentanyl. You know, once they start it, it's worse than heroin. It's worse than methamphetamine. Most folks are polydrug users, so they're using the fentanyl and the methamphetamine. But it's so accessible and it's so cheap, you know, so that's why you're seeing folks shoplift or loiter or panhandle. And so I would encourage, you know, our community to continue to donate to nonprofits who help those in need, but not give that money directly. You know, I'm appreciative of Mayor and Council giving me the median ordinance, so hopefully Tucson's seeing less folks, which is contributing to safer streets and less pedestrian fatalities.
They cannot be on the median?
They're not allowed to be on the medians. And so
but they can be on, like, by the stoplights?
They can be on the corner, and they can step out. They just can't step out and impact the flow of traffic. So when we look at those numbers, we have over 13,000 arrests this year between our felony and misdemeanor arrest, and that's a substantial increase. That's a 19% increase of our felonies. That's a 6% increase in misdemeanors. But when we really dissect that and we look at our drug arrest, we're up 51% on our felony arrest and 23% on our misdemeanor related to just drugs. So that's 3,500 contacts that we've had just this year so far related to narcotics. And so what happens is we overwhelm Pima County Attorney's Office and their ability to effectively manage that caseload, including our city court. So we're working with both of those team members to try to figure out creative ways. While we're short on officers, we're currently still overwhelming those systems with the amount of officers that we have, if that makes sense.
Mm. Do you see any effect of the appearance of carfentanil in this community?
We have had it. And so just to be clear, it's, you know, 100 times more potent than fentanyl. So it's absolutely a deadly drug.
Carfentanil
is another derivative. And so these are all chemical based, which means that their crops aren't having to be grown, you know, just to the south in Mexico. It's the, you know, drugs and the precursor drugs are coming from China to Mexico, they manufacture, and then our proximity to the border. So 55% of the fentanyl in this country continues to be seized in the state of Arizona. It is a problem, and our proximity just makes it so accessible.
So wait a minute. So fentanyl is 100 times more addictive and powerful than like heroin, and now this carfentanyl is even more.
Correct. So
what?
So as a community, what do we think about that? It's a call for action that, you know, we have to invest in systems. We have to, you know, we have to continue to arrest as a tool to hold someone accountable and to insert and leverage that arrest into treatment. So arrest, we really need to dissect, doesn't necessarily mean an incarceration, certainly means a detention. And that's where, you know, there's resources that can be utilized within the jail, Pima County Jail. I have a close relationship with the sheriff and, you know, it's ongoing dialogue. There is an effort for diversion and deflection programs in the transition center at the Pima County Jail. And what we're seeing is, you know, some pretty promising numbers of 20% reductions of recidivism. And so I think we need to, you know, we should be, I think that the term evidence-based strategies gets overused at this point. I think what we need to be talking about is how do we use the data? What does the data tell us? And how do we measure what we're financially investing in and the impact that we're making?
Paul Ingram, another quick question.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, can you tell us about, I mean, for people who are getting on the medians, are they getting tickets? Are they getting arrested? Are they just getting told to move along by officers? How does that work?
It can be a combination of both. I don't have those numbers, unfortunately, in all my data set in front of us. I can tell you that we've had over 20,000 traffic contacts, and those would be within those. Our goal is always to educate, and you know, we're not going to use one specific tool to just do one thing. It certainly depends too. You know, there's chronic areas that everybody knows about. Fort Lowell corridor from Oracle to Campbell is heavily populated, and you're going to see a lot of folks at the bus stops and in the medians. I think when we drive through areas like Speedway and Swan, you know, Craycroft, Alvernon.
Right.
You know, Broadway, the I-10 corridor, Grant and I-10. So those are areas where it becomes another tool for the officer to decide what the best course of action. And what can happen is, a lawful civil contact can turn into, you know, warrant checks and those types of things and different activities occur.
I always like to bring up traffic enforcement. It's such an area that everybody out in the car listening to this radio show right now is concerned about, or they should be concerned about it. Where are we now? What are you trying to throw at? What resources are you throwing at that, Chief Casper?
Yeah, so for traffic fatalities, we're at 44 as of this morning. We had a delayed fatal. So sometimes we'll investigate something and an incident that's not a fatal at that time, but somebody passes away later from the injury. So we're at 44 from 54 last year. Median ordinance has certainly played a role in reducing, creating a culture of safer streets. So right now we're sitting at 11 traffic fatalities for pedestrians versus 18 last year.
Mm-hmm. That was a real area of concern, I know, over the last few years.
Right? Yes, absolutely. And two bicycle compared to 6 last year, 10 motorcycles compared to 12. I'll remind everybody who drives a motorcycle, even though you get the left turn to go in the arrow or you're first in line to, as you can split traffic, look left, look right before you go through that intersection. And then we're at 21 vehicle fatalities to 18 last year. So again, I just read an email last week of somebody saying, hey, why aren't we doing more traffic enforcement? Actually, I think it was from one of the folks running for council. Mm-hmm. The reality is we're doing 20,000 traffic contacts a year with a limited amount of staff and traffic safety officers. So they're doing a great job out there. And this is an ownership issue for everybody in town. You know, you all have a loved one. My stepdad was actually involved in a serious collision in the county just over a week ago where two individuals were drag racing and my stepfather was nearly lost his life in a collision.
Oh my goodness.
This is an issue outside of our major it's not just a city issue.
Yeah.
This is a major metropolitan, all of our communities connected. So your kids, you know, there was a juvenile involved in my father's situation and a 22-year-old male. So it's I would say when we talk about reckless driving behavior, it tends to be that 16 to 30-year-old male. So if you have any of those in your life, this is the point to have that conversation.
I don't think any of us resemble that.
We all have done those foolish things, and most of us have survived from them. But street racing takeovers, all those things need to be discussed.
The social media takeovers of an intersection, is that still an issue?
We have put a lot of resources and time and energy to tamp that down and done a great job with it. So we're not seeing them as much. But yes, it's still a social media-driven event that takes a lot of resources to combat those, including air support resources from a metropolitan, you know, response.
All right, Paul Ingram, I think we've covered about, what did you have? Anything quick on your stack of stuff, or we pretty much did it?
I mean, we could keep him all day if we wanted to.
It's like speed dating.
I know. I think that's going to have to wrap it up with the chief. Thank you so much, chief, and we'll book your next appointment for the autumn. Thank you, sir.
Happy to be here.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, Tucson.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Paul Ingram from Tucson Sentinel sticks around for a couple of minutes of chat with me. That's what we do in segment number 3, typically here on Fridays. And a note, Paul will be sitting in this anchor chair 3 weeks from today.
I'm excited.
He's the guy, as I'm going to try to work in a little late summer vacation. All right, we'll be right back. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Always a pleasure to have the Chief of Police come in and give us an update on what's going on with the men and women in blue. And I'm not sure if the community resource officers, Paul Ingram, wear blue.
They do. They wear like a light. Really? They wear a light blue.
Wow.
I mean, actually, I think our officers are actually they're in black.
Oh,
for the most part.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Probably,
right. Which always struck me as being really hot in the summer.
Yeah.
Especially when they have the long sleeves.
Especially with you've wearing the bulletproof vest.
Right. Right. But yeah, the CSOs have a really light blue. It's very clear who's a CSO, and especially since they have the Ford Mavericks now, so they don't have the Crown Vicks anymore. They have a different vehicle. You see them doing it at traffic. Especially traffic accidents, you'll see them kind of setting the scene and getting traffic moved through.
All right, it's segment three on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. All the green things, like all the human beings, are saying, where's the rain? But anyway, hopefully it will be coming. Paul Ingram is the senior reporter at TucsonSentinel.com, and he's a contributor to our program, and I'm actually going to turn the keys of the show over to Paul 3 weeks from today. I think you'll do a great job. To be announced, but it will be it'll be a newsmaker.
We'll get somebody good.
Okay, we kind of touched on this with the chief, and Laura Conover, the Pima County attorney, was with us last Friday as our Friday Focus interview, and she thought it was unprecedented. Probably is that the feds kind of swooped in and the dead of the night and took a murder suspect out of Tucson and put him in federal detention.
And put him in federal detention. So we're talking about Julio Cesar Aguirre. He was involved in a carjacking and a man, Ricky Mart, was killed. And so he was arrested. He was arrested by Tucson police. He was taken to a hospital. He had a dog bite. He was in their custody for a bit. And then the feds came and got him. And then they took him into their own custody, which they're able to do. Aguirre was here in the country illegally. He has a long history with the federal government as well. So they took his case in. There was a bit of a back and forth between Laura Conover and the feds. The feds announced that they had a case against him and that they were going to charge him with multiple crimes. And they weren't going to charge him with murder, and they still haven't charged him with murder. Laura Conover and the Pima County Attorney's Office want to charge him with murder, and they were able to get a grand jury and convince him to get first-degree murder. Meanwhile, the feds have charged him with other set of crimes, and then just this week, they came out and they actually charged him with two crimes that could really lead to him being put in life in prison or conceivably the death penalty. They're not murder cases, but not murder charges, but they're similar enough that they could lead that into the same.
Could he
book.
Be somebody that may be sent down to Honduras or something? Or to what do they call it? The alligator prison in Florida?
I think that was the fear from the family, especially once the feds took him into custody.
He would be gone,
go through the federal system and then be deported really quickly, and then they wouldn't get the justice that they really want. So in this case, because the crimes that they're going to go, he's definitely going to be put into federal prison if he's found guilty. I mean, we have to keep in mind this is, we don't know this yet. Right. He's been accused. When it comes down to it, yes, he's going to be in federal prison for a good long while if he's found guilty on just one of these charges. If he's found guilty on all of them, he could be like at life in prison, or he could get the death penalty. The Trump administration has been more aggressive about going for death penalty cases, and they've also been more aggressive about actually executing people. So,
all right, Tucson Sentinel's Paul Ingram. Paul, like those of us here on our radio program, we've been following Project Blue very carefully. We had Adelita Grijalva on the show on Tuesday. She said if she'd been on the Board of Supervisors, she would have voted no about it. She said she didn't even really know about Project Blue because of the non-disclosure agreement. She said she wasn't privy to it. But anyway, she's a hard no on that, even though she won't have a vote.
Right.
But still, it's pretty influential when the front runner in a congressional race doesn't like Project Blue. Paul Cunningham said on the program Wednesday he's a hard no. It seems like the momentum is building against this thing.
I think that's very true. I think when you see with the couple of public hearings they've had, there was a public hearing last week at Micah Mountain High School, the crowd was really. They were really pretty frustrated about the city's answers. They really wanted better information. At one point, one gentleman actually said to Tim Tamura, he said, are you playing me? And Tim, of course, had to say, no, I'm not. But there's a very clear frustration. And I think part of it is because everything was done under a non-disclosure agreement. We didn't even know who the company that's going to run this data center was until last week. And that was kind of uncovered because there's somebody spell out the name before they had the NDA or just kind of accidentally did it despite the NDA. It's Amazon Web Services. It's Amazon. Sure. Also, though, is people who don't want Amazon here either. The real reality is there's big questions about how much electricity it's going to use, how much water it's going to use, how much pollution it's going to use. And that's, against how many jobs it might create, because there's going to be construction jobs, but those are, of course, temporary jobs until all three facilities get built. And then there's going to be about under 200 jobs that are being taken care of the actual data center. So, yeah, right now there's the folks who have said something about it have said that they were going to vote no. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been really good positive yes, I would like to vote for it. We ran a statement from Rex Scott, who wrote an opinion piece about why it should be supported. So it's possible that this may change, but right now a lot of the public are really against it.
Yeah, that Rex, chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Rex is still 100% in on Project Blue. All right, Paul Ingram, where can people find out more about your work and your colleagues at Tucson Sentinel?
I mean, we have a great website. It's TucsonSentinel.com. You can also follow us on all the social media sites. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Blue Sky or Mastodon. You can just look out for us. We will also send you a great newsletter. So if you sign up for that, we will send you news in your email in the morning.
Is there a charge for your services?
Everything is free. We don't have a paywall. So if you want to come look at our stuff, then you can certainly do so. And if you think we're doing a great job, you can subscribe and give us a donation, and we really appreciate it.
Okay.
We appreciate everyone's support.
Thanks, Paul, for your support. We'll look for your work here on the show for sure in 3 weeks. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive. Ken Carr waiting in the wings to tell us what to do. Give us some tips on how to stay cool on a very hot weekend. Be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. All righty then, time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's 80 degrees in Silver City. That's a lot cooler than here in Tucson. Why? The elevation, 5 to 7,000 feet. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. You will have a terrific time. Only a about 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Hit I-10, take a left at Lordsburg, head up the mountain, and you're going to escape the heat in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Ken Carr from 101.7 The Drive joins me in studio. Is there any possibility of anything to do that might be cool? It's cool inside.
It's one of those parts of the year where we have some outdoor activities, but you have to be a hearty soul to go, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Tucson Saguaros baseball is in playoffs now. They had a pretty good season. They play in the Pecos League, and the playoff games, the first series is a 3-game series tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday if they need the third game at Keno Stadium. And go Saguaros!
They must have a cool logo.
They do. It's a cactus.
Oh, really?
Or I guess a saguaro would be
saguaro,
the correct.
Right? Yes,
let's correct that.
Yeah.
I guess this is a little cooler. It's Insectopia. That's how you say it. Cool summer nights at the Arizona Sonoran Desert Museum. The museum in the cooler evening hours. Bring a flashlight, too. You might be able to see some pretty cool creatures running
like
around
out there. Like creepy crawlers.
A little bit. Or they just like to think of
gentle
them
giants.
As interesting and beautiful when they look in the mirror.
That's always fun.
Anyway, that starts at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Also, Boy Scouts are having a car show.
Mm.
This is on Houghton Road, 15921 South Houghton in Corona de Tucson. It's a car show, pet food drive, car wash, and then also a breakfast and dinner fundraiser, and that's tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. They're doing it smart. They're doing it in the morning.
Yeah,
early in the morning. It's a little
early
bit cool.
Morning.
Yeah,
that's very early.
Yeah. That's how you have to do a lot of things. When I had a house and was doing yard work, that's what you do. You do it in the early morning.
Yeah, 4:30 in the morning.
Also, coming up tomorrow is Saturday Movies in the Woods at Woods Memorial Library. See what they did there? 3455 North 1st. It's Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Mm. That you can see for free, and they also have free popcorn.
Very cool.
All right.
All right, Ken, I'm going to have to leave it right there. Do you have another quick one or no?
Nope, go.
All right, thanks. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Theme music composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, who puts up all of our podcasts. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Ken Carr and all the team at The Drive. And really, everybody here at Bustos Media. Have a great weekend.